first time with us today, as Eric said, we're in a new series called In the Name of Love, and we're taking a look at the way that pride kind of manifests itself in our lives. And the reality is every single one of us, we're always looking for opportunities to prove ourselves. Much like this scene right here from the middle, I mean, you know, regardless of where we are, we feel like we should be in a better place. We want to be noticed more. We want to be looked at as more important. We want to be seen as successful. We surround ourselves with things, and to be honest, there's absolutely nothing wrong with these things. In fact, there's nothing wrong with ambition. There's nothing wrong with going after it. I want to be really clear today as we kind of kick this off that, there's nothing wrong with a little ambition. Some of us need to get after it. Some of us need a lot more ambition in our life. We need to grow a little bit of that. The question I really want us to go after today is, what drives us? What is it that causes us to want to pursue excellence? What is it that causes us to want to do big things, important things? Because, you know, the reality is there are any number of realms in our life that can manifest this pride in our lives. It can cause us to not just be driven, but we have to ask ourselves, what's driving us? Or is it that we're trying to make ourselves look important? We're trying to do certain things, be seen by certain people so that we feel important, versus this idea that God just tells us that we're accepted, that we're valuable, and we receive that just as a human being, as made in the image of God. And so we're going to kind of look at this over these next weeks, and we're going to really unpack some of the truths that I believe will help us to move out of a position of pride. So my name's Kurt, by the way. I'm lead pastor at Crosspoint. Great to have you here this morning. Always excited to see you join us. And whether it's your first time with us or you're here every week, we believe God does things as we gather in this room. So before we do anything else, let's just pray. God, I'm thankful that we can gather in this place, that as a part of our Sunday, probably for many of us, God, there's 100 other places we could be right now, things we could be doing, and yet I would ask that as a result of our time in this dark auditorium today, God, that you would show us something. God, there are many places that we can talk about the things that we're going to talk about today, and God, I would just ask that when it comes to pride, this is one of those things that rarely are we able to self-identify it in our lives, and yet, God, I would ask that you would help us in some unique way to maybe see something that we've never seen before. And so I just ask that you would meet us where we are, regardless of our spiritual background or spiritual orientation, just meet us in that place as you can do. Pray these things in your name and according to your character. Amen. Well, you know, for me, a lot of times the way that pride manifests itself in my life is through this right here. I mean, not actually through my desk. This isn't actually my desk. This is some of my stuff. But through my position, through this position that I hold here at Crosspoint. And I have to be very keenly aware of how this plays out in relationships with other people. In fact, just this week, I was in another church and I was having a dialogue with a couple of the leaders there. And one of the support staff leaned over and said, "Hey, Kurt's a pastor." And they began ringing off the words to a song. They said, "Hey, do you know what this song is?" And I looked at them. I'm like, I have no, it's like Chinese to me. If it's not David Crowder or Chris Tomlin, I probably don't know it. And so, you know, they're trying to figure this out. And in the midst of that conversation, I immediately went into telling them about this cool email that I had gotten from Eric earlier this week. Eric's our connections director here on the weekends. His day job, he said he doesn't sit at a desk. He actually sits at a radio booth. He's the on-air host for the morning show at Air One. And even as I'm sharing this story with you, you have to be really, really aware of am I letting pride come through this story right here? But I think this has some context for you. And so Eric sent PJ and I an email, and he said, "Hey, my two worlds just collided. My role on the radio and my role at Crosspoint." Somebody from Crosspoint emailed me and said, "Hey, what's the name of that song we've been doing here at Crosspoint over the last few weeks? We ended our service with it last weekend. I've been looking all over iTunes. I can't find it anywhere. It's called In the Light of the Morning." And he's like, "Well, of course you can't find it because PJ wrote that song. It's not published yet." All right, and it was just kind of a really cool deal. And so I'm sharing this with these people that asked about lyrics. And amidst this conversation, all of a sudden I'm realizing, I'm thinking, what value am I bringing to this situation right now? Why am I sharing this really cool story, exciting stuff to be able to have that happen? And yet at the same time, I thought, you know, I'm sharing this because I want these people to see that I'm important. I want these people to see, man, I've got important people around me. Kurt surrounds himself with important people. And I began to realize that this was just one of the pathways, one of the ways that pride manifests itself in my life. And it causes me to say, you know, what drives me? Why do I feel the need at times to share things that make me look important? And if we're really honest, we probably all can identify. In fact, I want you to think about that for a moment. How many of you, sometime in the past, have allowed pride to manifest itself in a relationship, in a situation where maybe you shared something that wasn't really pertinent to the situation, but it made you look important? Just out of curiosity, let me see a show of hands. All right, yeah, just hold those up for a moment. Yeah, this is good. This is a really healthy exercise right here. Keep them up, because this right here, yeah, just keep them up. This right here is the spiritual condition called pride. All right, we all deal with it, and we're going to talk over these next weeks about how to address this. Now, keep your hands up for just a second. This is really important. Now, look around. Those of you who don't have your hands up right now, this is a spiritual condition called lying. All right, and we're, at some point in the future, we're going to address this as well, all right? Because here's the reality. We all have this spiritual condition. We all deal with pride. We all, at times, you know, try to make ourselves look like someone we're not. And at the core of that, I believe, is this deep desire to be accepted, this desire to prove ourselves. And again, there's nothing wrong with proving, but we have to get to the core of what's causing me to have that need. And so we're going to begin to unpack this, because oftentimes the roots of pride go way down deep, and they span out much broader than we ever begin to realize. And so I want to go back to the root of it today. We're going to go all the way back to the beginning of the Bible. This is where a lot of things begin, namely us. This is where our story begins, back in the book of Genesis. And kind of the storyline in Genesis, this is right after the creation account. God has just created human beings. This is around the time of the fall. And basically, God created the world, and he put people in it to steer it someplace, to manage it. He said, hey, I want you to go, and I want you to be caretakers of this planet. And he gives us this incredible freedom with limits. He says, hey, I want to give you a freedom to do nearly anything you want. And there's one thing. He said, there's one tree. I want you to kind of stay away from this one tree. And so, you know, this was a tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And so basically, God, this is like God saying, hey, I want you to enjoy everything I've created. But this one thing, you are just not created for the weight of this thing right here. So it's for your own good that you don't partake of it. It's for your own good. I'm actually protecting you by asking you to refrain from the weight of this one thing right here. And then all of a sudden, we see what happens. We see temptation show up on the scene in the form of a serpent. And this serpent, this snake, shows up, and he begins to tempt Adam and Eve, and he tempts them with this statement. He says, hey, God's just holding out on you. He's holding out. He's not protecting you. This isn't for your own good. This is God not allowing you to have everything that he's created. And so here's how we see the account go right here, beginning in chapter 3. Says he, meaning the serpent, said to the woman, did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden? The woman said to the serpent, we may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God did say you must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not touch it or you will die. You will not surely die, the serpent said to the woman, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Now, there's a couple fascinating things going on right here. You know, one of the ways that we often see evil manifest itself in our lives is it's just a slight deviation from the truth, and it has this very familiar ring to it. I mean, we almost see it and we hear it. We're like, oh yeah, that I know that. That's something that's good and true, and yet there's nothing true about it. And so this is what the serpent's doing right here. He's saying, hey, did God really say you couldn't eat from anything in the garden? And see, this is what he's doing. He's like, you know, hey, this sounds very familiar. God said you could eat pretty much from anything, whatever you want to do. And Eve says, well, yeah, he basically said that, but he said there's one tree in the middle. And this next place, this is the critical statement at the end. It says, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good from evil. She says, oh, you're going to be like God. I mean, God's actually holding out on you. He's not protecting you. God is actually withholding something that is rightfully yours, that you're entitled to have. And so creation in this moment tries to become the creator. And the balance of the universe is totally upset. And so by taking the tree from the fruit from the tree, the knowledge of good and evil, creation takes on the weight of choice in the world. God said, hey, I didn't really create you for the weight of this, but since you chose to take it, you're going to now deal with it. And the toxic waste from that decision has been flowing down into our lives ever since. In fact, there's words that we have today that were created after that event that God never intended for us to experience. Words like rape, words like murder. Words like war, words like bitterness, words like racism. I mean, these were never a part of what God intended for us, and yet, because of this toxic waste, because we chose to take on the weight of something we weren't intended to bear, this is now a part of our experience. And it was all done in the name of control. It was all done in the name of us saying, hey, I want to call the shots. I don't want to be dependent on my creator. I want to be independent. All in the name of trying to be God, we accepted this weight. And really what it comes down to is, in trying to be like God, we actually become less of ourselves. Every time we try to become like God and become God,
we become less of ourselves. And so this is the root of pride right here. We try to become the one in charge. We say, man, I want to call the shots. I want to be in control. I don't like this idea of depending on anyone. I want to be independent. And so this flows down into our world from the tree all throughout history into us today. And so back in December, we took a look at a guy by the name of Herod. He was a key figure in the Christmas story. And Herod had a chair. He had a chair, much like my chair right here. And Herod, his chair was a throne. In fact, he was king of all of Palestine. And Herod at one point heard that there was a new king coming. In fact, he heard there was a baby who was going to be born, who was going to be king of the Jews. And so Herod does something. He hears these rumors, and he's very threatened by this because he doesn't want to give up his chair. He doesn't want to share his chair with anyone. So he kicks into what's called throne preservation strategy. And throne preservation strategy is this. He orders the slaughter of all Jewish boys under the age of 1.5 or 2 years old. And he says, you know, I'm going to kill them all, and this is one of the ways I'm going to preserve my throne. And so we see yet once again another person kind of trek through history saying, if I just annihilate the Jews, then I can get what I want. And so this is what Herod does. He said, I'm going to kill them all. And so the slaughter of baby boys was his throne preservation strategy. He wasn't going to give up his chair. And at the root of this, again, was pride. We see it's pride. Now, this flows down to you and I as well. In fact, I know that when we gather in this room, we come from different places, different social backgrounds, different religious backgrounds. We come from all over the board in this place. And, you know, I know that we all have different beliefs on who God is and if Jesus is really who he says he is. Some of us aren't really sure if we believe the Bible, if it's really true. I mean, there's a lot of perspectives in this room. And what's really cool about Crosspoint is this place was created for you to be able to come and pursue and explore at your own pace and kind of figure these things out as you do. I mean, you know, there's no pressure. We just want to create an environment where you can kind of take this in and kind of make a decision for yourself. And yet I can tell you that wherever you are in that spectrum, I can guarantee you one thing, that the one thing all of us have in common is there have been moments in our life when we have stumbled upon something that we say, I mean, that's truth right there. That is truth. And we've stumbled across it, we've seen it, and then we've acted against it. We've resisted it. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, maybe something came into our life. We're like, that's really true right there. And we've gone into self-preservation strategy because we didn't want to relinquish the chair. We don't want to relinquish control. And we basically say, I know it's right. I'm even seeing this thing. I'm like, this has got to be true and right. And yet we act against it in the name of control. You see, every single one of us have this issue. Doesn't matter your spiritual background, your ethnic background. We all have this issue. And so, you know, what do we do about this? I mean, how do we resolve this? Well, you know, there's this really big word that's kind of the antithesis of pride, and it's the word humility. And what's interesting about humility is, you know, humility is something that oftentimes we're like, that person has a lot of humility right there. And we think that, man, they must have been born with that because they have it and I don't. I mean, it must just be something that they got when they were born and I didn't. Kind of like being short and tall. They're short, I'm tall. You know, it's something you have or you don't. You're born with or without it. But here's what I want to kind of us to wrestle with. Maybe some of the good things that in life don't tend to come naturally to us. Maybe, possibly, in the broken world that we live in, some of the best things that we can experience are things we actually have to work on and go after. They don't just naturally appear. And so as a result of this, I want us to look at what it means to work on humility. I mean, if pride is this big of an issue, if we've had a relationship go bad or a work situation go bad because of pride, then we probably need to address this because the roots go deep. You can pull out the weed on top and the roots remain. And so, you know, Jesus talks a lot about this, and there's some things that I've done over the last number of years, and I want to be really clear. I am not the poster child on this. You are going to see real clear as you do every week. Kurt does not have this nailed down, all right? And so, but there's things I've been learning. There's things that I've been growing in over the last number of years that I want to kind of unpack for us this morning. If we can say, you know, pride is somewhat of an issue for me, how do I begin to work out of it? Very practical ways. And so the first is this. The first thing we can very practically do to begin to create a life of humility is to practice being insulted, all right? Now, that sounds really warped, right? I mean, like, I'm going to put myself in a place to be insulted. I'm not talking about putting yourself there. What I'm talking about is you and I build up defense mechanisms that prevent us from being insulted. You know what we do? If somebody insults us, we're like, man, I'm gonna insult them right back. I'm going to show them, man, they mess with me, they better never touch me again. And we hammer them back as soon as we're insulted. And for instance, the first time somebody told me, you know, Kurt, the Bible actually talks about this. It actually says, do not pay insult to insult.
And I was like, no, it doesn't say that. I mean, I was really bummed out when I learned that, to be honest with you. I thought, man, I've got a gift. This is a key gift in my life, is insulting people. I mean, I can hammer with the best of them. And in fact, I was so bummed by it, I'm like, I know there are other translations of the scripture, so I went and found a couple others. I'm like, surely it's going to say something different. Same thing. It says, do not repay evil for evil. Don't pay insult with insult. You see, I'm really big on justice. I'm really big on, man, if somebody does something to me, then I grew up with kind of a fairness mentality, and I've realized that one of the ways that I've grown, that God's challenged me to grow in my humility, is if somebody insults me, to not repay them back, to accept it and move on. I'm not talking about being a whipping boy here. I'm talking about taking on an attitude of humility instead of just repaying evil for evil. And this is one of the ways I can grow. I can not exchange insult for insult. Another thing I've been realizing over the last few years is that you can combat pride is intentionally serve beneath your leadership capacity. Now, this is an interesting one because, you know, all studies, statistics, material will say that you thrive when you're in the environment where your leadership capacity measures or is challenging what you're actually doing. And so, you know, when we talk about this idea of serving beneath your leadership capacity, I'm not talking about living in that environment all the time, but this is why serving is such a big deal to us here at Crosspoint. This is why we always are saying, hey, if you're getting connected around here, one of the ways you can grow in your relationship with Christ is to get involved in serving and volunteering, not just here at Crosspoint, but in the community as well. You see, we've kind of identified that one of the greatest problems in our culture today is selfishness. And if that's one of the greatest problems, if that is the root of nearly every problem that you and I experience in the world today, then how do we combat that? Well, we cultivate a life of selflessness. Well, how do you create a pathway of selflessness? You put yourself intentionally in places where you just serve, where you do things that you otherwise wouldn't do, where you don't necessarily get a benefit out of it, at least directly, but you say, I'm going to do this because I want to cultivate a pathway, a trend line of becoming more selfless in my life, and it affects my relationships and my marriage. And it happens all the time around here. The last I checked, PJ said he didn't get a degree for putting batteries in his little pack back there. You know, we have people in here that set up and tear down this environment every weekend. And the last I checked, they don't have degrees for that. The last time I checked, you know, changing a baby's diaper in the nursery, while there may be something on that for 5 minutes in home ec, that's not a degree, all right? People don't, like, orient their lives around this. And yes, what's fascinating to me, though, is we have people that are CEOs around this place. We have people who are high-level financial people, people who manage other people's, you know, wealth. We have people who serve as nurses in hospitals who do these jobs, these very unnoticed jobs around here, because they see it as a pathway. They see it as one of the ways that they can contribute, and it can cultivate a pathway towards selflessness in their life. And it's not just here. I mean, it's in our community. One of the ways this played out for me recently is last year, I had the chance to coach my daughter's softball team, and it was a very unique thing where, you know, we made it to the quarterfinals, and we thought, man, it's great. We were pumping the girls up. We're like, man, it's always awesome to make it to the final four teams. Really, we were trying to prep them for losing because we knew they had no shot in winning this deal. And we won our next game. And all of a sudden, we're going to the championship, and then we're like, man, it's great to make it to the championship, and you're here, and we should just be excited about that. And then we won the championship. It was really cool, totally unexpected. And so this year, I signed up on my little form when my kids signed up for playing sports to help coach again. And I thought, like, surely they're going to want the championship coach back, right? And so, you know, I weighed, and of course we get the call for, you know, tryouts, and we get the calls for our daughter's place on a team. And all of a sudden I realized, I'm like, man, I didn't get the call. And one of my buddies is like, what are they doing? You know, surely you bring back the championship coaches. His wife was coaching with me. And so we were kind of struggling with this a little bit, and I realized, man, that's a pride thing. My identity got wrapped up in this role that I was in. And so I decided, I said, you know, I'm gonna help with my son's team this year. I'm gonna volunteer to be an assistant coach. And I tell you what, it's a really interesting process. Because in my day job, you know, I make decisions every day. In my day job, I direct things. In my day job, I make critical strategic decisions every day. In fact, it's funny, I said that again. First hour, somebody said, I'm going to call you out on pride. You said you make critical strategic decisions every day. I'm like, okay, once a week. All right, I'm just elevating myself so you really feel like I'm important, all right? I told you, I'm not the poster boy on this, all right? But here's what happens. When I show up with my son's team, my job is not to call the shots, even though that's what I do during the week. My job is to say, hey, Coach Mike, what is it you want me to do today? What drill can I lead for you today? And I might see things that I would, like, man, I would do that differently. And yet I submit to his leadership. That's my role. It's been training me
in humility. And it causes me to back up and ask the question, you know, if I have to be, just because I serve in a role, my job's in a role where I kind of steer something, if I have to steer every situation I'm in, I have to ask myself, what's going on beneath the surface? How deep have those roots gone? Why do I feel the need to steer and be in control in every scenario? Do I have the ability to play my role when I need to and then to just simply show up and serve and support at another time? If not, I mean, pride probably has a grip in my life. You know, the third thing I've been learning is I can take this stuff to God. You know, there's a part of the Bible that talks about praying always. In fact, it says pray continuously. And this doesn't necessarily mean you're like down on your knees in a dark room 24 hours a day, though I guess if you can do that, that could be a good thing. This is talking about throughout the day, through the mundane day in, day out things. You know, Paul's talking about, hey, just pray, utter a prayer, almost like inhaling and exhaling. Almost like, you know, as natural as breathing, that when I'm getting ready to go into a meeting, I just inhale and exhale a prayer. It could look something like this. Hey, God, I'm getting ready to walk in a meeting. When I get in here, I need to be laser focused in this meeting today. Will you help me do that? It's when I walk into a meeting saying something like, you know, God, when I walk into this creative team meeting, I need to be very creative. I need to be on my A game when it comes to creativity today. I just ask God that you help me to do that. It could be when I walk into another meeting saying, you know, God, there is an EGR that's going to be in this meeting here today. Does everybody know what an EGR is? Extra grace required. You know those people where, like, we all have them, where you're like, man, this is an EGR right here. It's a good little abbreviation. You know, we all have those people. When you encounter them, you're just like, man, I need a lot of grace just to spend 15 minutes with them. And I say, God, help me to be graceful in this right now. It's as natural as breathing. God, you know, when I'm in this situation, when an insult comes my way, help me to respond gracefully and just take it and move on. Help me not to repay insult with insult. This is what it means to talk to God always through the day. Because one of the things I've realized is that when it comes to pride, sometimes we misdiagnose our problems. Pride is a very, very difficult thing for us to see in our own lives. We see it in other people's lives really easily. But when it comes to our own life, we struggle to see it. So some have equated it to saying it's kind of like trying to see your own eyeballs. The thing you're actually looking through, you to see that. You know, and what happens, I mean, sometimes we say, well, my work is a problem for me. I'm always putting in extra time, extra hours. My work is a problem. It consumes my life, and I just need to change work. Well, maybe work's not the issue. Maybe there's an underlying issue. Maybe there's an approval addiction you've got. Maybe you're constantly needing affirmation to an unhealthy point. We all need affirmation, but you so long to be better than everyone else, to be accepted in a higher position than everyone else, that you will outdo every one of your colleagues, and it just drains you. And you have no time for your family, no time for friends, and you realize work is not an issue. There's a deeper-seated issue at the root of this, and maybe it has to do with pride. You see, when we misdiagnose the problem, we often reach for the wrong remedy. You know, I was standing in line at a sporting goods store recently, and a few people lined up and started a dialogue with another dad, and he had some really cool gear in his hand, started talking about it, and he started saying, yeah, I'm getting this for my daughter. He said, you know, I don't get to spend much time with her, so I'm leaving my during the week job. I'm getting ready to go to my second job, and so I'm getting this for her, so, you know, she can at least, you know, kind of know I'm a part of her life. And then he said, you know, then I got to go to my third job on Sunday, and at this point, I'm kind of feeling bad. I'm like, damn, this guy, he's struggling. It sounds like his family's struggling a little bit, and I love, by the way, those, like, checkout line conversations for an introvert. I mean, an introvert's love a very defined beginning and defined end. And I know when he checks out, I mean, we're done. And he's going on and I'm going on and it's over. And, you know, and so we're having this conversation and I'm just genuinely feeling bad for him. And so he gets up and he pays and he leaves. Conversation over. I get up and pay and I walk out into the parking lot and I notice he's placed these bags down next to this really nice sports car. And I'm like, oh, man. So I'm like, Mr. Checkout line guy, so like if you would sell that car and pay off maybe some of your debt that I'm assuming is why you've taken on your second and third jobs and maybe keep up on your bills that way, then maybe you would have more time with your kids and you wouldn't feel so disconnected. Maybe the problem's not work. Maybe it's you feel like you have to have all this nice stuff around you. Now, I didn't really say that. I mean, I'll be honest. I was thinking that. All right, I was thinking that, but I didn't say that. But here's the deal. There are probably a couple things going on right here. I thought maybe this guy has fallen prey to the ways of the world. Maybe he's fallen prey to this idea that if I put nice stuff around me, if I have important things around me, people are going to see me of value. And he's valued that even more so than spending time with his family. And he's made a string of health of unhealthy decisions, and it's kind of got him here, and he's not even seeing how it's impacting him, his relationship with his kids. Second thing going on right here is I thought, man, I probably have a very healthy dose of prideful judgmentalism right here. I mean, in a matter of 30 seconds, I've diagnosed his problem. I figured everything out in his life, and I thought, man, if he would just do this, it would solve everything. I don't know. There's probably, what I realize is probably a little bit of both of those going on right there. You see, if we don't have a regular inhale, exhale moments regularly throughout the day, it's very hard to get a finger on the pulse of how pride is taking over our life. Last thing I want to hit before we wrap up is this idea of submission. Submission, you know, we don't like that word right there, submission. You know, submission is a big word. We like to be independent. We don't like to depend on other people. And yet God has uniquely shaped and formed us to be not only submissive to him vertically to God, to Christ, but he created us to be submissive horizontally as well with our friends, with our community. In fact, I would add to this submission to community. You know, and we can be better, we can be stronger, we can have healthier relationships, healthier families when we submit to community, when we allow people around us to speak into us. For instance, one of the ways this popped out for me a number of years ago when I was thinking of leaving my staff position at the church I was at previous to this. We were starting to dream and think about what became Crosspoint. And as a part of that, I'm an introvert, as I've said. And I, you know, the way I typically make decisions is I'm like, I'm going to think about it. I'm going to process it. And then, bam, I'm going to make a decision. In fact, sometimes this is a problem. For Julie and I sometimes, I'm like, man, Julie, I threw this out. And we've had a lot of dialogue about it. And I can't understand why you feel like we've never talked about this. I've just talked about it in my head with myself because I'm an introvert, and I have to very intentionally reach out and remember to connect with others. And so, you know, I did this. I realized I really need to handle this well. And so I did this. What I typically do in those scenarios is I look for people with three criteria. One, people that know me very well. Second criteria is I wanted people who had my best interest in mind. And the third criteria is I wanted to look for people who had a healthy pattern of making good decisions in their lives. And I went to these people, and I began to gather them around me. I began to say, hey, I want you to comment and help me through this process. So Julie, of course, my wife, was in that process. She's one of those people. I reached out to my friend John Satinga, his wife Tammy, who were here at Crosspoint. I said, hey, I want you guys to be a part of this process for us. I reached out to my good friend Scott McDonald, who's now on our governance team here at Crosspoint. I said, hey, I need you to be a part of this process with me. I reached out to another friend, Stephen Dewey, who was a confidant for me at that time in my life. I reached out to my brother and sister-in-law, Mark and Barb. I said, hey, I want you to be a part of this process. And then I reached out to our board of directors at that church. And I said, I want you to be a part of this process. I want you to speak into my life. And as a part of that, I said, you know, here's what we're wrestling through. Here's what we're dealing with. And I need you to speak into us, and I give you permission to speak anything into my life, and I promise I will not respond in a threatening way. I want to receive that. I want you to have the freedom to speak directly and question me on anything as we go through this process. And then third, I want you to pray for me. And so we began, you know, to go through this 3 or 4 or 5 month process, and just to show you kind of how serious I was about this, I told all of them, I said, hey, if anybody has red flags about this along the way, then we'll put the brakes on it. We'll halt it. We'll bring it to screeching halt. And yet at the same time, if we receive affirmation in this, then we're going to go for it. And so, you know, we went through these months, and there were times we had some hard questions. And had to wrestle through some difficult things as we played this out and what this was going to look like. But in the end, it was a very healthy process. You see, we have to build a community into our lives that we can submit to when we have major decisions to make. I mean, it's critically important. It brings about great health. And ultimately, what it really does is it strikes at the core of pride that, hey, I can make this decision on my own. But instead, I'm going to let people speak into me. And so, you know, if you're thinking about a job change, or, you know, maybe there's somebody that, you know, you're thinking, man, I really want to marry this person. I mean, what kind of community are you reaching out to? How can you bring people into your life to allow them to begin to speak into you and to help you through that process? Maybe there's a major decision with a move, or maybe you're thinking about divorce, and you know what you need. You've been convinced in your mind what you need to do, and you need to ask yourself, have I really reached out and allowed anybody, any people that I trust that always have my best in mind, have I invited them to speak into my life? And so over the next weeks, we're going to continue to dig into this. And we're going to try to uncover some of the places in our lives where the roots have began to take deep holds, and it's impacting our relationships, our job, maybe even our families, our marriages. And as we wrap this up today, I want you to take out this connection card that we drew your attention to earlier this morning. Eric asked you to fill this out. On the back side are some next steps. And, you know, we're really big. If it's your first time with us, we're big on helping you take some next steps, on saying, you know, what am I going to do with this? Where am I going to go with what God may be saying to me today? Because here's the deal. We care way too much about you to let you just walk out and be like, man, that was nice. That was good. We want you to say, what am I doing? What am I proactively going after to root out pride in my life? So I want you to take a few moments and read over that. And as you do, you know, as I've thought about this, I thought, you know, there's a number of us in this room today, and there's probably some of us that are married, probably some of us who maybe our marriages aren't going well this morning, if I can be just blunt. Maybe it's not been going well for a long time. In fact, maybe in your scenario, one of you cares a little bit more about your marriage than the other. And one of you, the two of you, is actually putting a little more effort into it. In some way, accidentally even, you've stumbled across realizing that, and you thought, man, they care a little more than I do about this, and that actually gives you a little handle of control. In fact, when they came and said, you know, in the spirit of, hey, in the name of love, I care about our marriage, let's maybe go see a counselor. You know, you were like, well, why do we need to see a counselor? Why would we do that? Why did we parade all of our baggage and dirty laundry in front of somebody? We know what our problems are. That was your objection. Maybe that's your objection, but underneath the surface, maybe there's some pride there, and you're just like, man, I feel like I'm in control, and if I do that, then I may have to submit to the process. And maybe you're just sitting in that chair, and you don't want to get out of the chair. Maybe some of us this morning, we've been very successful with business. We've kind of climbed the ladder, and we're in a place now where we oversee a number of people. And now we have many people that work under us. And over time, you've kind of lost connection with the reality that your role as a leader is to actually serve the people that are serving with you and beneath you. And you know, now you give out orders or commands and say, hey, here's our next initiative. And people don't respond. You're like, hey, why is nobody jumping? You just kind of expect everybody to jump whenever you say jump. And yet, maybe it's because you're stuck in the chair. Maybe you've lost sight of the fact that you need to get out of the chair and go serve. That being a great leader is about humility and serving those who are a part of your team. And until you do that, until you get out of the chair, maybe put a little pride aside and say, hey, I'm in this with you. Maybe nothing's ever going to change. Or maybe there's a friendship that went south. Maybe he said something or didn't say something or didn't do something or she did do something. Well, I don't know what it is. But it's at a place where you're like, well, you know, I'll forgive him. I know forgiveness is what I need to do. And you know all about forgiveness, but you're like, I'll only forgive if they come back and do X, Y, and Z and own A, B, and C. And in some unique kind of skewed way, that gives you a little bit of control. And you're sitting in this chair, and you like being in the chair. And you realize, man, if I let that thing go, then I got to get out of the chair. And what you're missing that forgiveness is not about them. Forgiveness is actually about us. It's about us letting go. It's about us letting go of the control so we can move on. They've probably moved on. See, forgiveness is about us. Maybe you've missed that. And you just need to get out of the chair this morning. So, you know, over these next 3 weeks, I mean, we're going to dive deep into this. And this is not about making us better people, nicer people. I mean, that might be a great byproduct. This is about us getting closer to the heart of God. What God desires for our lives. So as we begin to sing, take a moment if you haven't already done so. Mark your next step. You know, allow God, just open your heart. Open your heart and say, God, here's what I want to do. Here's the step I can begin to take this week. And trust God to actually give you the strength to take it. Let's do that and we'll sing.